You'll find that most people, when they fail at something, they're gonna get a gallon of Häagen-Dazs, get a blanket, go under the covers, and not come out, forever or for a long, long, long time. But people who have the right belief system or entrepreneurs, they realize that failure is just a form of market research. And had they not tried a couple of things that maybe did not work out so well, they wouldn't have done a couple of other things that helped them make millions or tens of millions of dollars of wealth. That it was one step closer to success. And so it's all about helping people with mindset, because we're known as the folks that help people create multi-generational wealth, and obviously the people that then have it to help them preserve it and grow it.
Let's get ready to scale. Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of Ready to Scale. I'm your host, Jeanette Friedrich, Director of Investor Relations at Blue Lake Capital. Joining me today is the perfect guest, Mark Murphy. Mark is the CEO of Northeast Sequoia Private Client Group, which is a national financial planning and wealth management firm. He's passionate about empowering entrepreneurs to achieve multi-generational wealth by providing personalized strategies that focus on emotional fitness, wealth accumulation, and a plan that can work under all circumstances. Mark holds a BS in finance from Indiana University and two designations, one as a chartered life underwriter and another as a chartered financial consultant. An interesting fact, Mr. Murphy has been ranked number one in New Jersey and number three in the nation on the 2023 Forbes America's Top Financial Security Professionals list. He's joining us today from New York City. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
And Jeanette, thank you for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, likewise, very much so. So, Mark, to get started, just to give, our listeners some insight into your background, when and why did you decide to pursue a career in wealth management? Can you just kind of tell us your story?
I thought I've been doing this a long time, but I always thought we'd be successful. I always, thought we'd make money, but this was always my vehicle to make other people's lives better. And I always realized that I was always at my best when I was serving others. And so this just gave me a great platform to create abundance and to help as many people as possible.
Excellent. It's a wonderful motivator for sure. All right. Well, let's kind of dig in. So, there was a recent wealth report released by Chubb that had some really interesting findings, and I think it's important to really dig into some of these key statistics, because I think that there's a way that those that are not wealthy view the wealthy. There's a way that the wealthy view themselves, and then there's very different levels of wealth, right, along the way. And wealth management, I'm sure you're exposed to these different, if you will, kind of levels, right, that people achieve over time and how it makes them feel. And so one of the things that I thought was really interesting in the report, and basically I'd like to just share some of the statistics with you
Sure.
and see, if you agree or disagree and why. So the first one that I thought was super interesting was, according to the report, 68 of respondents do not consider themselves wealthy, even including those with investable assets of more than 10 million. Would you agree with that? Disagree with that? How do you define wealth?
I think money is never math. It's always psychological. And I think it also depends on where you live. Like, my happy place is Bloomington, Indiana, where I go watch my Hoosiers play basketball. But when you live in New York City or you live in Southern California like you do, you can have $10 million and collect food stamps. Where in other parts of the country, and it also depends on the lifestyle that's there. And I think that it is everything is a mindset. And wealth is clearly people that create wealth have a mindset or an entrepreneurial mindset and a belief system that's different than other people. And I think it also depends a lot on how much control you have in your life, meaning that ultimately the people that are self-made, that understand how to create wealth, how to generate revenue, how to do those things, they generally feel in control. and they know that they're the master of their own domain. Often people that got that money through divorce or inheritance or something like that, are playing with a different set of rules and circumstances. So I think a lot depends on not only where you grew, not only how you got your money, but when you grew up. And I think it's also another philosophy in terms of, you know, even things like how people think about expenses versus investments, meaning in my world, an expense is always on the chopping block, but I have an unlimited appetite for investment as long as I can get at least a 4 or 5 to 1 return on my money or more. And so I think it's everything's belief system. As I always say, it's all BS. It's all belief systems.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I did not, in preparation for this call, I pulled a lot of stats. I didn't actually pull some of the information that I read about old money versus new money, but since we're kind of opening the door, I'm not afraid to dive in there. It's really interesting, some of the results that I saw about old money versus new money, meaning those that, you know, essentially inherited it or multi-generational families that, you know, that are carrying on that type of wealth versus how wealth is viewed by new money. And it appears now that new money is much more prevalent than old money because it's very difficult for generation upon generation not to frankly screw it up, right? Or squander it away in some way, shape, or form. What have you observed to be some of the key components for these individuals that are creating, quote, this new money generation and this entrepreneur mindset towards wealth?
Well, I'd start with both of them. One is there's a very famous study, the Williams study, where they studied 3,200 ultra high net worth families. And by the end of the second generation, 70% of them were done. And by the end of the third generation, 90% of them were done. And everybody you talk to who are ultra, ultra affluent, to me, that's, in my generation, that's 100 million or more.
Sure.
They all think they're going to be in the 10% when they're going to be in the 90. And they're doing the things, all the things that there's a reason why that occurs. Nobody wants that to occur, but it's going to occur 90% of the time. And I think there, you know, we spend a lot of time helping those folks create an environment where they have a chance to be in the 10, not in the 90. But having said that, I think with new money, I think it's about belief systems with people. I think with new money, it's not that you have to be smart. You have to have, I find that, you know, I'll give you an example. I'm not afraid to be different. I'm afraid to be the same. A belief system around money is I don't believe in competition. I believe in differentiation. And so I think a lot of times with people that are entrepreneurs and people that create wealth, you'll find that most people, when they fail at something, they're gonna get a gallon of Haagen-Dazs, get a blanket, go under the covers and not come out, you know, forever or for a long, long, long time. But people who have the right belief system or entrepreneurs, they realize that failure is just a form of market research. And had they not tried a couple of things that maybe did not work out so well, they wouldn't have done a couple of other things that helped them make millions or tens of millions of dollars of wealth. You know, that it was one step closer to success. And so it's all about helping people with mindset, because we're known as the folks that help people create multi-generational wealth. And obviously the people that then have it to help them preserve it and grow it. But I mean, that's an example of a belief system.
Interesting. Very interesting. There's a lot that I want to ask behind that, but I'll try to keep us a little bit on task, but it is definitely insightful. And it reminds me of, and it's something we talk about a lot at Blue Lake. It's, you know, the difference between a growth mindset versus a limited mindset. And, the idea between playing defense versus offense and how that is tied to a growth mindset versus a limited mindset. So I very much agree with you on how people face adversity and whether they embrace their failures as lessons learned and, you know, grow from that or allow that to crush them is definitely, you know, very important. But moving on nonetheless, so also one of the things that I thought was very interesting, and I'm curious if you have encountered the same feelings and attitudes from your clients, 66% of the respondents to this study said that building wealth is more challenging than ever before. And I find that to be kind of mind-blowing because I see opportunity all over the place. And what I have to struggle with is the ability to say no to a lot of nifty ideas and just remain focused. It seems to me like there's so many ways that wealth can be built. What do you think about 66% of people saying that they feel like building wealth is more challenging than ever before right now?
I go back to mindset. We'll talk about, we have a presidential election coming this year. So half of my friends say if Joe Biden gets reelected, the world is coming to an end. And then the other half of my friends, if Donald Trump gets reelected, the world is coming to an end. There's only two opinions on that. It's either coming to an end no matter who we put there. And I remind them, depending on their age, that they made money during Reagan and then Bush and then Clinton and then the next Bush and then Obama and then Trump and then Biden. Whoever gets elected, they're going to be fine in terms of that piece. And I think it's a, I think you have to have core beliefs, but those core beliefs can have to serve you. So I think if the people that think it's going to be a lot harder to create wealth are going to be right. And the people like yourself, Jeanette, who think it's going to be a lot easier to create wealth are going to be right too. Either way that, it's almost like around money that I think the most important thing is that people have to have a good value system around money, because if they don't have it, when they create more wealth, their problems, if you triple your wealth, you don't triple your problems, you're like 10x your problems, because you just have more money to get in trouble with bad values. It's like giving an alcoholic a fifth of vodka, and instead you buy him a case of vodka. That's there. And I think with the tools that are out there, wealth is going to, is being it can be created. And I think it's open to other people who are, reasonably willing to work. I mean, I think if you're reasonably intelligent, I think that ultimately, there's four types of intelligence. I think you don't have to be a genius to create wealth, but I think you have to be reasonably smart. You got to, have reasonable intelligence. The second kind of wealth, which I think a lot of people are familiar with as well, as EQ, emotional quotient. I've got to be able to read you. Are you following what I'm saying? Are you angry? Are you confused? Are you disgusted? I've got to be able to read the room. Three is, I think a lot of people with wealth have SQ, social quotient, where do people like you? It's easier to create wealth and create relationships and to do those things if people like you. So you have good social quotient. But I think the one that is very under recognized is AQ, adversity quotient. And so when everything's going great, everybody's a superstar. But when what hits the fan, how do you turn those lemons into lemonade? How do you flip the script? And how do you learn to turn every problem into an opportunity? Remember, ultimately, when you're creating wealth, it's never the problem. It's how you think about the problem. And then on top of that, when something bad happens to me, I think you have to recognize it. You have to say, if you don't deal with it, it just goes, it doesn't go away because you don't deal with it. You got to deal with the problem. But ultimately, your mind immediately has to go to what's great about that. Where is the opportunity in that problem to turn that into an opportunity? Because so many people go and focus right on the problem or focus on the problem, but I focus on how you think about the problem differently. And in my mindset, the other thing I also think about, I played competitive chess growing up, and I was a master's bridge player. I do have some master's points. So I was always thinking 8 moves or 13 tricks ahead. I think ultimately, why would you ever want to solve one problem when you could solve three or four at the same time? So how do all that those pieces fit together? And I think that, how do you velocitize that decision so it can be more impactful? And I think that's the essence of leverage and creating wealth.
Excellent, excellent insight, and really an excellent segue into you talking about some of the challenges that we're dealing with in the market right now and the volatility. I would love to hear, your perspective on, kind of how you're advising your clients to deal with some of the challenges that we have in today's markets. So before we get into that, though, let's have a word from our sponsor. Ready to Scale is brought to you by Blue Lake Capital, where we hunt down the best multifamily investment opportunities that we can find and invite investors to join in with us. We target Class B value-add multifamily properties across the Sun Belt. Our CEO, Ellie Perlman, invests a substantial amount of capital into every deal. This means our interests are aligned with yours. If you're an accredited investor looking to expand your portfolio and diversify sponsors, be sure to visit us at bluelake-capital.com. Blue Lake Capital, Be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward. All right. So Mark, particularly from where I'm sitting, when it comes to multifamily investment, commercial real estate is in trouble, right? You see it in the news every day. Office space is taking a beating. Multifamily has got a lot of pressure on it right now. There's a lot of, you know, challenges across the board in the market when it comes to, you know, people trying to buy homes and interest rates, you know, cap rates. I mean, there's a lot of volatility in the market. The stock market has been up and down. I'm a huge fan of NVIDIA. It's been very good to me, you know, but I'm very nervous too, because I'm afraid that at any moment, you know, it's going to kind of pop and I'm going to lose a lot of money. There's a lot happening. So, you know, talking about seeing these challenges, seeing, you know, all kinds of problems in the economy, in the market, whether you're looking at the upcoming administration or interest rates or whatever it may be, you know, what is your take on how people can navigate through this type of volatility and with all the different things that we're dealing with right now?
I don't think it's any different than it is in any other time, meaning, you know, we've trademarked our pyramid to create multi-generational wealth. And the bottom of the pyramid has always been cash confidence. At the end of the day, the number one reason why people either fail or more likely don't reach the level of success that they should have reached has been because they don't have enough cash confidence. And all I can tell you is that you need money for downturns or emergencies. You need to have enough cash there. If you have a bad quarter, a bad year, make a bad investment, do something where it's not crippling. But also, I don't know about you, but I've created an awful lot of my wealth when I've had money and somebody else needed money. And so the idea is that for both opportunities or emergencies, at the bottom of that pyramid is cash confidence. The second thing I also think is the best place entrepreneurs invest their money, as I go up the pyramid, is I always tell people to feed their money machine. So for most people, their money machine, whether it be the real estate business or an operating company or without a business, is that if I only had $1 to invest, I would always look to feed my money machine. And I mentioned in the top of the show is I have an unlimited appetite for investment as long as I can get a 4 or 5 to 1 return on my money or more. And just because you own a business doesn't mean you're an entrepreneur. Most people who own a business bought themselves a job. They get paid for what they do rather than what they know. So what we want people to do is get paid for what they know. We want them to join that entrepreneurial class rather than, you know, being a job owner. But even if you don't own a business like many people do, it's that entrepreneurial mindset. What can I do to invest in myself to have the right education or training or to build the right network of people or to get the right skills or to be able to, I love that great expression that people say, it's not what you know, but who you know. And there's truth to that. But I always say, to me, everything is about marketing. It's not, it's who knows what you know. You know, meaning you can have the great, you can have the greatest product in your in terms of the work that you do with your clients. But if nobody knows about it, who gives a darn about your performance? Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, the success of your company is going to be finding out who knows about you and who knows about what you do. You know, like I coach a lot of people, or I'm a key business strategist, critical thinker, financial advisor to folks. And you'll talk to people and they don't realize that, you know, 80% of the business is finding the people. 20% is actually doing the work. You know, and they think, oh, if I just get good, you know, it's like you pick a dentist. You could be the best surgeon in the world, but if you don't have any patients, it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of work you could do. You pick the best, you know, car dealership in the world. It doesn't matter if you got the best cars if nobody's coming into your dealership. So, you know, I think that's the next level. Then I think you move up to, you know, what we want particularly for people is we want, you know, as somebody who manages billions of dollars, we believe there's only two asset classes. Now, obviously, there's dozens and dozens, but for our purposes, it's paychecks and either free capital or paychecks. So one of the things we encourage people to do is to set up a series of assets that will give them a guaranteed or highly reliable stream of income to replace their income in what they're doing. In fact, the people that are in the real estate business, as you know, that's usually one of their paychecks. And for the people that have great cash flow from, say, an operating company, often use real estate as a piece of that portfolio. But then we also want to have play checks. And what I mean by play checks is we also want to have a series of assets where you can spend it, you can save it, you can give it away. But the important thing is it will not be responsible for producing income for your family. So if you have both paychecks and play checks, that's financial freedom. But I think there's still one more level. If you can have operating companies with earned income in your 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, when many of your friends are worried about living too long or going early bird specials or having a scarcity mindset, even if they've got, a substantial net worth, those are people that are still in abundance mode. And so, that sort of to me is the pyramid of creating multi-generational wealth.
Very interesting and really very helpful. I love that. I assume, and I actually don't know this from my research, so I'll just admit my ignorance up front here, but I assume surely you've written maybe a book or two that you share with
Actually,
those.
my last book, which was my third book last year, was number one on Amazon.
Nice.
I've got a top 40 podcast. At the end of the day, it's it comes down where here's where you get to a point in your life where I kind of paraphrase Eckhart Tolle, and I'm paraphrasing what he says, but he says there's two suitcases you have in this world. So I grew up dumb and broke in Suffern, New York, and so the idea is like I'm so proud of all the money I've made and all the money we've given away and all the accolades I've gotten and all the, being associated with great names like Amazon and Forbes and, all these great institutions are being published and all the writing I've done and all that stuff, the number one book and all that stuff. But I think those are all egoic things. And when you leave the planet, you can't take that. This is what Eckhart says. You can't take that suitcase with you. But what he says is the other suitcase you have is when you realize that who you are is all you've got, then you can decide the kind of person you want to be. And so at this point in my life, I focus on that second suitcase is being that person. And what I try to do with people is, of course, we help people. We're known as the people who help people create multi-generational wealth. But open, but more importantly, I would like people to live a life by design. To live a life, the life that they want to live, and where money plays a role in helping them have the life they want and accomplish the things that are important to them. And the question that I get asked, probably, I've probably been asked this 10,000 times, is they say, people will come to me, Janet, and say, they'll say, how do I grow my income? How do I grow my business? How do I grow my freedom of time? Want to take more time off? How do I grow my freedom of relationships to spend more time with the people I want to, both in my business and personal setting? Or how do I grow my freedom of purpose, one of the five freedoms? And you're one person, I'm one person. It's very daunting for one of us to think about that. And so probably my favorite book, and it described our business to a T, was the book of Who Not How. And so, because I've always thought the right question was not how, but who do we need to collaborate with to grow our income, business, freedom of time, relationship, and purpose? And so that's the focus that you have with people and helping them collaborate. Because as an example, I decided I wanted to be a hero to entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial thinking people like 35 years ago. And we've created a business where I've collaborated with people who want to be a hero to the same group, where we have that entrepreneurial synergy, where that client sees that that's the only place they can get that experience. Like I think so many people say to me, I want a level playing field, or they say, no, I don't want a level playing field. They go, I want to run straight downhill. I go, well, that's better than a level playing field. But I think ultimately what you aspire to do in your business is to create an experience where the only place that person could get that unique experience from is by working with you and your firm. And I think that's where I spend all time working with folks to try to figure out not how to compete, but how to differentiate from other people that are there in their space.
Interesting. And what is it that made you decide that you wanted to focus on entrepreneurs?
Well, I think ultimately, ultimately, it's interesting. I did a project, I'd say, 20 years ago, where I tried to clone like most people. You go, hey, here's our top 50 clients. I'd like to find more like that top 50. So I sort of sat back and I go, tried to find some commonalities and tried to analyze, how could I get more people like those? And I found they were mostly big thinkers. They were usually loyal. They generally wanted to be in transformational rather than transactional relationships. They appreciate our expertise. I could probably give you four or five other things that were common to most of those people. And I couldn't really figure it out. I sat on it for a while, but there was a commonality, but I couldn't figure it out. And then a couple of years later, the light bulb went on. I said, "Well, that's who we are." And so, who better to advise a serial entrepreneur or a family office or somebody than another entrepreneur? Because quite frankly, people that were looking for to have to be less than in their life would bore me to tears.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking for people that you want to create a bigger, better future for them, for not only themselves, but for everybody else they touch. And so that's generally what entrepreneurs are. And I also think that entrepreneurs are you know, with all the regulation, the divisiveness in this country, a move towards socialism and some may say even communism, that what's going to lead this country out of abundance is entrepreneurial thinking. And we as a country need to encourage those people to be able to come from underneath people and lift our entire society up and make it a better place. And so that to me is exciting to do. And it also gives me a lot of energy because the thing you also learn, Jeanette, is that it doesn't take a lot of energy to be yourself. It takes a lot of energy to be somebody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And very much having an entrepreneur spirit myself, you're resonating with me 100%. I would love to go further into this, but I do want to touch on something that I know is very important to definitely at least a good significant portion of our listeners. So multi-generational wealth. I know that my family is definitely a huge driver in everything that I do, very important to my values. Fundamentally, I will never tire of this mission because it is, grounded and founded in love that will not die. And it drives me and drives me on. But there are some very unique challenges to multi-generational wealth. And, recently we shared a blog article that highlighted some of those. Like, for example, there's, an interesting resentment of wealth among sometimes younger generations. And, sometimes there can be steep, political divides within families and how they want to allocate those resources and, what type of, humanitarian causes they want to support or back or give to, or what kind of philanthropic activities they want to be associated with. A lot of strange problems that rich people have that people don't think rich people have, type of thing. And it can be very significant though when someone has worked to create a legacy that they want to hand off, to the next generation and the one following that, and then to be met with the disappointment of it not being welcomed or appreciated or squandered or flat out resisted. So I'm curious to know, what is your advice for those that are striving to create multi-generational wealth? How do we teach the next generation and the generation following that to embrace it, to do so wisely? It's, I mean, it's almost like asking a fundamental parenting question. How do you give your children values, right? How do we
You know,
teach values?
I have five kids, and if a mistake that I've made is when you grow up dumb and broke, you want two things. You want your kids to have the things that you didn't have, and you also roll differently. You just travel in a different place than you did, when we were a kid. That's just your life and the life you live. And so the thing that I think you and I could spend 12 hours talking about this subject because I've thought about it deeply, but. What's the one thing when you ask people what would they like for their children? What do you think the number one response is? They want their children to be.
Better off than they were.
I would say that's what's up there. I'd say number one is they want their children to be happy.
Yeah, I
And by the
absolutely.
way, I want my children to be happy too. I'd love my children to be happy, but that's not my role as a parent to make people happy. That's their job. Although I would love them to be happy, my job is to make them hardworking, thoughtful, respectful. It's about in our family, it's about faith, family service. You know, it doesn't matter what your political beliefs are and how, as long as it's legal, moral, and ethical. And I don't care what you do, but just do it to the best of your ability. You know, and we also define when you have wealthy families, we define success differently. Success isn't just about money. Success is about, do you think if somebody is a, you know, is making a difference in a lot of other people's lives and changing lives for the better and serving. But that's not a job that pays millions of dollars a year. Are they a failure? Are they a loser? I would say no. Sometimes there's too much around that money. And I think that you have to teach people to learn money. Like I find that when you're in the Midwest or the South or places where you need guns to survive because you got bears running across your front yard or wild animals or something, and you need to support yourself in the middle of the woods in Montana or something like that, you'll find that children are very used to, in those towns, using guns, using them well, respecting guns, taking care of them, locking them up, putting them in there, because they've grown up from a very early age with a respect for guns. And you'll find that a lot of the problems with, say, gun use, and I'm not pro or gun use, I'm just saying there's a difference in using a gun in New York City or using a gun in Montana in terms of the need for that gun. So I find that when I talk to my friends in those areas about their guns, they think about it a whole lot differently than the people in New York City, where we're talking about a bunch of gangbangers who are shooting up the streets or people are doing crazy things. It's a different conversation. And I think it's the same thing about wealth. It's the same thing. Don't you need to start at a very early age at giving your children the respect for money and what it brings and what the power of that can do? And that's okay if you don't want to participate in our family business or there. You're welcome to take a life of poverty. You're welcome to, we're going to support you in whatever you want to do. Just be a good person. Just be a good person. Just show up and be the right thing. You don't have to have any anger about it. That's okay. We're happy to cut you out of the inheritance. That's fine. Go. We're happy to do anything you want to do. I want to support you. Just be really good at it. You want to do something, just make it legal. Make it ethical, make it moral. Just make a difference. Care about somebody other than yourself, and I'll support anything you do. And I think, just like, being embarrassed about wealth. And I would say that to me, like, I have a child of mine who, a couple of children who are, they're embarrassed not about the wealth. They're embarrassed about the fact that all of their friends look to me or us for favors or things we can do for them. Can you help me get this job? Can you help me get into this school? Can you help me get this internship? Can you help me fund this project? Like, all that stuff, they come to you. And I go, so let's take a look at a few things. Number one, let's really identify who are really our friends and who are really our friends because we can help them, their acquaintances. And let's make sure we're very clear on who family and friends, why family is so important, and who real friends are, and who are people that we're in a relationship or an acquaintanceship with, right? And the second thing is, you can look at it. And I was telling my son, I was saying to him, I don't want to mention his name, but one of my middle son. And I said to him, you can look at it two ways. One is that these people are trying to take advantage of us because we have access to these things. I said, or you can look at it, how fortunate are we that we are in the position, the ability to help a lot of other people? And if they're friends of yours or people you know, they're probably good people. So how good is it that we can help these people? That's how I look at it. And all I can tell you is, I didn't get where I want by myself. Am I a self-made man? Yes, I am, and I'm proud of that. And I worked my you know what off to get where I am. But a lot of people helped me along the way.
Absolutely.
And isn't part of the gift at this world? Isn't part of the world is in the giving? Isn't the gift in the mitzvah? Isn't the gift in being able to be able to give back to those other folks? Don't you feel great about that, about doing that? And if you do, and like I always say, I'm a pretty decent fundraiser for both charities and politics. And I, there was the expression they always say is that they always say, give till it hurts. And I say, if it hurts, you're not giving enough. Give till it feels good. Give to make a difference. It's just an outlook on life, but I think that's just how I think. I mean, how do you think? What, tell me, Jeanette, is that radically different than you think?
Actually, no, it's not. But I do think that we are probably in the minority how we think. I think the key to living an extraordinary life is making impact, is living a life of impact, impact that you can look in the mirror and appreciate who you see in front of you and be proud of who you are and what you strive to do every day and the impact you make around the people around you. I think a life without impact is a life cheaply lived.
You and I are siblings from another mother. That's there. But I was going to say, we're not brothers. We're siblings from another mother. But I was going to, when I when a lot of people, and I, this is for anybody, but I get I'm at the point in my life now where a lot of my friends' kids are coming to me. They want my advice because it's hard to be a prophet in your own land. You could tell your kids something, and but if you told my kids the same thing I said, you'd be a genius, and I don't know what I'm talking about because
100%,
I'm stupid. I'm stupid.
100%.
I'm just their father. But here's the, if you're familiar with the Japanese term, igikai, is they ask four questions in Igikai. So if you were coming to me saying, hey, do you think I should go into this industry? Should I go into real estate, which you guys are in, or should I go into the widget business or whatever? I would ask these, I would say, I'm going to ask you four questions. And I think if you answer yes to one or two, or not even three, or not even all four, you must be not a yes, but a hell yeah to all four of these questions. If you're not a hell yeah, I'd say pass for now. And so the first question in Igikai they talk about is, am I passionate about this? Are you getting involved in the widget business or the real estate business or in the finance business because you think you're going to make a lot of money, because you're really passionate about it? Because if you just chase money, there's never enough money.
Yep.
You know, and so they are my passion. Second question we ask them, are you good at it? The third question is, does the world need that product or service? And the fourth is, can I get paid to do it? And so if it's a hell yeah to all four, well, then I think you're on the right track. Because life is too short to just do things. I mean, who wants to live a life, that the people always say to me, they go, you tell me about your work-life balance. And I go, I don't even understand that question, because I go from one thing I love to something I love more to something I love more every single day. And sometimes it's around my business or one of my companies or businesses. Sometimes it's around kids or Lisa, or sometimes around family. Sometimes it's just about doing something cool that I want to do, because we could go do it. And why would I do, at this point, I just want to do the things I want to do. I want to enjoy every minute of my life. I always say to people, get a piece of paper at least once a year and put a line down the middle and a T at the top, and write all the things you hate about your job or your business. And on the right side, write all the things you would be doing in retirement that you're not doing now. And I'll say, well, how old are you? They go, I'm 42. So I said, okay, let's get rid of a few things on the left side of the page and get rid of and add a few things on the right side of the page. With my theory being, if you're not doing the things you don't want to do and doing the things you do want to do, why wait till 65 to retire? Why don't you retire at 42 today in terms of stuff you have, and have this life well lived? Mm-hmm. And so that's the definition of a life well lived.
Excellent, excellent. Mark, you actually summarized very well something that I actually always ask our guests on our show, which is, if people want to live an extraordinary life, how can they go about doing that? And you actually just hit it right on the head. That's perfect. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation. I know we're both limited on time, so I just want to be respectful of that, but really appreciated the conversation with you. I'd actually like to invite you back to the show again another time, so we can dig into some components, because there's so much conversation to be had. And I love the attitude that you're exemplifying about wealth, about what to do with it, about relationships, network, how to leverage them, how to make impact into people's lives, people's worlds, and how there's so much more wealth there than you will ever find in just dollar bills. So absolutely fantastic. But before I let you go, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Well, our corporate headquarters is in Roseland, New Jersey. It's a Northeast Private Client Group. And you can reach me at, it's Mark with a K, Mark underscore Murphy at northeastprivate.com. Or we're at, I think, northeastprivateclientgroup.com is our website in Roseland, New Jersey. And so, the only thing I hope is, when I write books, I don't write them for myself. And I'm working on my fourth book now. But I hope when someone reads it, the greatest compliment I can get is they think I wrote it for them. And that's the compliment I get the most often. And so that makes me feel good. And, I'd love to continue the conversation with anybody and continue with you. And just want to thank you for having me on your podcast, and just appreciate you, Jeanette. And I hope you have a great 2024.
Thank you. And likewise. For those of you that have invested your time listening to our discussion today, thank you so much for tuning in. Please don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, and review the show. Leave us some thoughts. Let us know if you have some additional questions you'd like us to pick up in another episode down the road. In the meantime, be bold, be strong, and keep moving forward.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.